Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Let me be clear. The indictments in this case were not politically motivated. They were the result of a thorough, lengthy, and professional investigation carried out by experienced and dedicated law enforcement officers and prosecutors.
I think Arizona's anti-SLAPP statute's application to criminal prosecutions is a novel development in the law in this country, and I think Judge Cohen properly understands the significance of that.
Almost every poll is somewhere between Harris plus 5 and Trump plus 5. That suggests an almost tied race. We give a small edge to Trump in this poll. But with more than 2 months to go, either candidate could win the state.
I need the independents to come and join us. And I think RFK Jr.'s endorsement went a long way to helping us close that gap.
Chief, could you have somebody come down here and escort Ms. Massey out?
Really, is that necessary?
Chamber? Yes, I think
it is. In front of my 10-year-old daughter, you're going to escort
That's
me out
fine.
For expressing my
she
First
can
Amendment
go with
rights.
You.
And joining me to talk about new polls on the presidential and Senate races in Arizona, the end of the lawsuit over Governor Hobbs' state agency directors and more are Daniel Scarpinato, former chief of staff to Governor Ducey, now with the firm Winged Victory. Daniel, good morning.
Good to see you.
And former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Roy, good morning to you as well.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to both of you. So we don't love to spend a lot of time on polls, and obviously tons of numbers on the radio is not great, but there are a number of new polls that came out this week about both the presidential race, mostly that one about the Senate race. I want to start just sort of the overall numbers and the trends you guys are seeing in the presidential race. There was a poll from OH that found former President Trump leading Vice President Harris in Arizona by 3 points. Emerson College had a similar margin with former President Trump leading. Fox News had a poll that found Harris leading by a point in Arizona. Daniel, obviously, you know, these numbers are fungible. It's still a couple months away from Election Day. What does this tell you about? What do these snapshots in time tell you about where we are right now?
I think where I see things is people call us a swing state. We are. But in many ways, we're more of a divided state. I think you have about 46 to 48% on either side that have made up their minds. And that's where these races are really going to start. I always felt like the polling that we saw before President Biden got out of the race was not really realistic. I mean, I think in this environment for a candidate to win Arizona in a race like that by 6 to 8 points is probably not going to happen. So I think that we're back to a point of kind of a more stable, normal race. I do think President Trump has rebounded a bit, and this is going to be a barn burner. What I find more interesting as a consumer of this information than the polling is sitting in on focus groups with swing voters, and you really get a sense of how conflicted they are and how they're making their decisions and how much, in a way that isn't really reflective in the polling, how much economic anxiety is driving a lot of their feelings about all these issues, including immigration and the border. And so I think that the candidates who talk about economic issues, that's really the spot that's going to move a lot of these swing voters.
Roy, what are you seeing here? I mean, obviously, you know, as Daniel said, it's going to be close here. I mean, maybe 10,000 votes, kind of like 4 years ago close. But is that kind of what you're seeing in these varying poll numbers?
I think that's right. I mean, there's a range here, but it all points, I think, to one thing, which is that it's basically a toss-up. It's basically tied right now. And, you know, your mention of 10,000 votes, I mean, that's what Biden won by in 2020. I can totally see a scenario where either Harris or Trump win by 10,000 votes again. And so, you know, I think we're kind of back to where we were. I will say, you know, if you're a Democrat, you're feeling a lot better than you did maybe 6 weeks ago, because the polling, you know, after the debate issue with President Biden was really bad. And of course, that was one of the reasons I think he probably got out of the race. And so now being in the race, you know, essentially in a toss-up scenario, I think is a good position. And I think, you know, it's kind of the original position. You know, I think reflects the nature of the state. And then when I think about some of the issues that Scott brought up, I totally agree. I mean, issues like the economy, like the border, are animating a lot of people. I would also say that the abortion issue, I mean, in that Fox News poll, you know, they did a poll of the abortion initiative here in Arizona, and I think the approval was something like 73% or something like that. So while some issues I think will play well for the Democrats, that includes, you know, that issue, there's some issues that'll play well for Republicans. We're just going to have this, you know, down to the wire fight.
Well, and I think to both of your points, we saw this week that the firm Ad Impact, which tracks political advertising, found that the Phoenix market is the third most heavily invested in market between now and Election Day, more than $107 million worth of TV ads. With due respect to what you guys both do for a living, maybe not a great idea to turn on your TV between now and then.
I think that's right. And I have questioned how much impact this will really have on the presidential race.
Hmm.
I'm not sure that this race is about advertising. I think it's about much more, because there's so much attention on it. People have such strong feelings about Donald Trump, and they're starting to formulate, I think, an opinion about Vice President Harris. So I feel like that, you know, there's obviously a ton of money being put into advertising on that. So much of it to me feels kind of like garbage in, garbage out to the voter, because I think that they're making their decisions based on things that they're seeing in the news or reading. I think social media has a big impact. Whereas maybe a decade ago, I think that would have been really the weight of message. The candidate who was winning the TV war, I think, would be better positioned. I just don't really see it that way anymore.
Is there a place still for, I mean, in a streaming world, in a skip ads world, in a DVR where you can fast forward through ads world, is there still a place for that?
I think so. I mean, I tend to agree with Scar, particularly in the presidential race, because, again, like, everyone's entrenched in their views, I think, on both candidates. And also, the money is going to be basically the same. So to answer your question, I think where it really matters is when there is a disparity. You know, one side does have a lot more money than the other, and maybe we're going to talk about the Senate race, but that's a good example of where that actually could matter, because it seems like Ruben Gallego is going to have a lot more money than Carrie Lake. So in that scenario, and then also in scenarios where maybe people don't know the candidates very well, that's where it'll matter. But at the presidential level, I don't think it does, because everybody knows these people.
Well, let's talk about the Senate race then, because there was a poll this week, an OH poll, that found Congressman Gallego leading Carrie Lake by 7 points, 47% to 40%, which is fairly in line with other polls we've seen Congressman Gallego having, at least the public polls that have been released, the nonpartisan polls that have shown Congressman Gallego with a decent size lead over Carrie Lake. Do you anticipate that race is going to be as close as either Senate races that we've seen over the last several cycles here or the presidential race here?
I do. I think it's going to tighten. Ruben Gallego, I think, has had an edge in part because he has been up on television since March or April. I think you're going to see it tighten after Labor Day. I think the cavalry is coming for Kerry in this race. And I also think, you know, when you look at all the races here, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, the Mark Kelly, Blake Masters race. Mark Kelly won by 6 points with $100 million and so many advantages built into that. And that's now considered a blowout in Arizona. So I do think this will be tight. And I think it'll be a barn burner and a coin flip like every other race we've seen at the top of the ticket in Arizona.
I wonder, though, Daniel, if to some extent Carrie Lake has a similar issue as Donald Trump and maybe to an extent Kamala Harris, which is that people already know her. And because she's been on TV for a long time, she ran 2 years ago, and for better or worse, they've already formed an opinion of her. Like, I wonder if if for her there's a lot of movement left, whereas someone like Gallego, who has served in Congress for a long time, but around the state maybe voters don't know him as much, opinions can go up and down on him.
I think opinions can go up and down on him. I think there's going to be a lot of resources coming in to define him over the next several weeks. And that will be, I think, a key component to how this race shakes out. Is are Kerry's allies on the right able to define Ruben in a way that allows her to really win the voters that are going to vote for Donald Trump? Because if she wins those voters, then she wins. So I think that you're going to see a lot more polarization in this race that you haven't seen through the summer.
Roy, do you see this race tightening as we get closer to Election Day as well?
I mean, yes, in a sense, because everything gets tighter. Now, tightening is different than it being tight, right? And so I think, you know, in that Fox News poll, I think he's up by 11 or something over Carrie Lake. Do I think it's going to end up with a spread of 11? Probably not, right? I mean, because again, this is Arizona. But I think, you know, the Mark Kelly, Blake Masters race, I think is pretty instructive because I think this is where it's going to end up, where you're in that 5 to 6 point range. And the reason I think I'm confident of that is because, you know, to Scarb's point, I mean, there is this element of the electorate that you have to win, independence that you have to win statewide. And Carrie Lake has demonstrated no ability to actually win those people over. And if anything, I think she's a worse candidate than she was when she ran for the governor's race. So that would be my concern there. Now, on the money issue, I mean, obviously, I defer to Scarp. He knows Republican politics better than I do. But I do wonder if the cavalry is coming at the level that she might need. And the reason I say that is because it's not necessary for national Republicans to take the U.S. Senate with the Arizona Senate seat. They can take it back with a Montana seat or Ohio. And so I wonder if the polling is that bad in another month or in October, where Rubin's up by 11, does the cavalry come in or do they concentrate on other states that are more winnable?
Well, and Daniel, I think to Roy's point, there's been a lot made of Ruben Gallego's money advantage over Carrie Lake, just the campaigns. But I think the question is, and the question has always been, how much outside money would come in? There's always been an assumption that both candidates would basically have what they need to get their messages across in the ways that they want. I'm wondering, though, given that, you know, there are there's polling in Montana, there's polling in West Virginia that shows those are maybe easier pickup opportunities for Republicans. Does all that outside money come in for Carrie Lake that maybe she was expecting?
I think it will. I think the Senate playing field is relatively small. So I don't think that from a national standpoint, you can write off any state. So I think Arizona, this will be a marquee race nationally nonetheless. I actually think Carrie has a way better campaign this time around. I think she's got a great team. And the governor's race was very tight. And so I think she actually has shown an ability to get a race really close. And I just think, you know, all of these races are going to be essentially tied in Arizona moving forward. And it's just going to come down to the wire.
Guys, there was a 3-day court hearing this week in the so-called fake electors case. The electors are trying to get the case dismissed. Using, among other arguments, the so-called anti-SLAPP law in the state. And Roy, we also learned this week that, as the lawyer in the room, I'll start with you on this. We also learned that the case, assuming it proceeds, will not go to trial for another year plus.
Right. And, you know, that's the sort of earliest state, right? I mean, there could be other delays, but it sounds like it's not going to start until 2026. And it sounds like it's going to, at least the judge is indicating, it's going to take several months. So it's just going to be a massive, massive trial. But on the anti-SLAPP issue, I mean, it's an interesting issue, right? You know, whether this anti-SLAPP law applies in this particular context. Leaving aside sort of how you are supposed to, you know, apply that law as a policy, you know, I think I have concerns about the fact that this could result in some of these electors not facing, or fake electors, I should say, not facing criminal prosecution. And the reason why I think it's bad policy is because if you can get away with doing that, which in my view was an attempt to steal an election, and there are no penalties, then what's to prevent it from happening again? And I think that's what how I, you know, entering another presidential year this year, these are the kinds of things that I worry about if that is ultimately how that law is going to be applied.
And this is a law, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it. So again, as the lawyer in the room, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's a law that basically is intended to not punish public officials for saying things that in theory could get them in trouble, but as they would consider part of their First Amendment rights.
Exactly. So the idea is that, you know, your free speech rights sort of cover your First Amendment rights, cover this kind of behavior, this kind of activity.
Daniel, does it matter, for example, assuming again that this case is not thrown out and goes to 2026, does it matter for Republican candidates that we're going to continue to be talking about fake electors for another year and a half?
Well, it doesn't sound enjoyable to me, but I mean, it's not helpful to anyone. I think that if you're a Republican candidate, you just got to be sane and you have to be clear about you know, where you are on this stuff, and you know, that the election was tabulated and Joe Biden won. So so I feel like I feel as a whole, the Republican Party has moved past this. But yeah, it's not helpful.
And yet there are still candidates who are not able to say that, or not, at least not willing to say that publicly.
Well, I think now the question that is being raised more is not about the 2020 election, but about the 2024 election. Mm. And, you know, will you accept the results 100% no matter what? And, you know, we will see what happens here. I think we're not going to know the result of the race in Arizona for some time. If it's as close as we're talking about, it could be a week or more before we know how many of these races land. And so who knows what the future holds.
All right. Let's talk about something that you know a little something about, Daniel, from your time in the governor's office. There was a formal agreement this week that the judge signed off on, ending, for now anyway, the dispute between Governor Hobbs and state Senate Republicans over her trying to sort of go around them and get her right. nominees or appointees for agency directors into their offices. Is there any reason to think that we're not just going to be back where we started come January, assuming that everybody does what they are saying they're going to do? The governor says she's going to send the same list of nominees to the Senate, and the Senate saying we're going to do the same thing we did before with those nominees.
Well, I think that this is divided government. It's what Arizonans chose, which is to have a Democratic governor and a Republican Senate. I think that I frankly think a lot of Republicans should be campaigning for these legislative seats on providing balance and being a check and a balance. Some of her original nominees were both a combination of unqualified, extreme on certain issues, or, you know, kind of completely unprepared for the confirmation process. We didn't exactly have an easy route on this stuff, even though we were the same party. I mean, we had to deal with the legislature. We had to negotiate our nominees. There were several nominees that the Republican Senate did not want to confirm. And if we were in a situation where we thought that was going to happen, we didn't put them through that process. We withdrew the name or didn't move forward. So, you know, I do think that no matter whether the governor and her team think that the confirmation committee was polite or the way they would have wanted it to go, this is the process. You need Senate confirmation. And so I think that they would be wise to pick more mainstream appointees for some of these slots and work with the Senate on trying to get bipartisan approval for them.
Do you think that's possible? Given the personalities involved, and you have someone like Senator Jake Hoffman, who is clearly not a fan of Governor Hobbs, who's leading that committee.
Well, but I think that's an important point, because unlike prior governors and situations where there were director nominees that needed to get confirmed, in the past, those nominees would go through the committee of record, you know, the committee that had the jurisdiction over a particular agency. That is not what happened here. We had this newly created committee. And as you've referenced, you know, people like Jake Hoffman were very hostile to the governor, were part of that committee. And it doesn't seem like that's going to change. We're going to go back to that same committee. So I imagine it's going to be somewhat similar. And I do think, you know, I disagree with Scarp a bit on the characterization that these nominees were unqualified. I just think that ultimately what happened, the process that was set up by the Senate Republicans was designed to hurt the governor politically and not actually, you know, address the agency director appointees themselves.
Do you think the governor made the right call in agreeing to basically going back to this arrangement as opposed to continuing to try to litigate it?
Well, I mean, the important point here is that I think she had to go back, right? Because in that litigation, you know, a Superior Court judge found that the process that she undertook in doing these deputy executive directors was an unlawful process.
She could have appealed that, though.
She could have, but ultimately the Superior Court wanted to have some form of settlement between the two parties, and then that's what they went forth and did. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I hope that this results, you know, next year in a re-nomination in a process that is not as politicized. And, you know, that's the hope. Otherwise, you know, again, the governor's going to have to think about what are her options.
Not asking you to get inside another human being's head here, but do you think that there was any amount of the thinking on the part of the governor and her team of a bit of a hedge of, hey, maybe come January, Democrats will control the Senate or it'll be split and we can, you know, there can be part of the negotiation and the power sharing, you know, changes to this process?
Well, maybe, although I guess I would just say, you know, governing isn't easy and you have to deal with other people and you have to talk to other people. And I think if Doug Ducey had said, hey, I'm just going to appoint whoever I want through this weird process and not get Senate approval, heads would have exploded and people would have said he was doing something completely illegal, which it would have been. And in this case, clearly there was a violation of what the Constitution lays out. I think the sooner they can figure out how to work with the legislature, build some relationships down there, the better off they're going to be because this should be the easy part. I mean, you need a functioning state government. It's a big part of the job of being governor. So find people who you can get that support from. And the Senate did approve a lot of people who were more mainstream subject matter experts rather than kind of these more political type appointees.
Roy, just about 40 seconds left. I want to ask you quickly. The court did not answer the question about decisions that the agency directors, the deputy executive, whatever they're called, directors made. Are you expecting litigation on some of those, given what how the court has said they were put in those positions illegally?
Yes, because it didn't take a position on that. And I think that's still an open legal question. In full disclosure, I'm in litigation right now where that may be potentially a question. But, you know, the other thing to sort of think about in this process is that when this nomination process began, of course, there was, a different leadership on the ninth floor for the governor. And so I have much more confidence, I think, in the way, you know, that office is led now going forward, that this process is going to be handled better. But ultimately, it does take two to tango. It takes, you know, a Senate Republican leadership to actually want to objectively, you know, review these nominees and consider them, again, as opposed to politicizing the issue in order to just damage Katie Hobbs.
All right, I'll have to leave it there. Roy Herrera, Daniel Scarpinato, thanks you both for coming in. Have a good holiday weekend.
You too. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.